It's the Transgender Edition of Radio Free Thinker. This week, transgender. What is it? What do you need to know? And why you should care? Let's begin episode 307.
It's time for Radio Free Thinker, the show that applies skepticism and critical thinking to everyday issues. The place where reason and reality cross sword, politics, religion, economics, and of course, science. Now let's get ready to be skeptical.
The cosmos is also within us. We're made of sparks. We are away. The cosmos can know itself.
Across the sea of space, the stars are other suns.
We have traveled this way before, and there is much to be learned.
Hello and welcome. Tis I, Don, your skeptical philosopher and political scientist. This week, we continue our little mini-series about issues that are vitally important to us, and yet subjects I don't really feel appropriate for me to be discussing directly. So this week, we tackled the issue of transgender. What is it? Who it affects? Hint here, not you, and why we should care. Okay, there's not really a lot about why we should care, Bart, because honestly, we're humans, they're people. It should be pretty obvious, folks. So, let's listen in.
Katie Couric has her own television show that I believe is called Katie. It's like a morning show, I think. She had Laverne Cox, who is the actress from Orange is the New Black, a trans woman, and Carmen Carrera, who is also a trans woman, who is a model. And I actually know of Carmen Carrera from RuPaul's Drag Race, but that was before she came out as trans. So Katie had these two women on the show, and I've only seen a part of it. I didn't see the offending part, but it was being written about, and I saw it being shared a lot on Twitter. So Katie Couric, who's interviewing these two women, who are really accomplished people, like all sorts of really interesting things to talk about. And apparently, Katie Couric found it prudent to ask Carmen about her genitals. And apparently the quote is she asked if Carmen's, quote, private parts are, quote, different now.
To be fair, she asks that to all of her guests. I like to open every interview with government officials. Are your private parts different?
Yeah, every actress and model that I speak with, I ask them about their private parts. I don't ask them about their upcoming projects, about how they got to where they are now. I just focus on private parts.
Like we were joking before, you know, it'd be like saying, when you go pee-pee, do you stand or sit?
Yeah, like, why are you asking this?
Yeah.
Are you talking to a small child who you have, like, a weird invasive relationship with? Like, literally, there's no human you should ask that question to.
Yeah.
Unless it's your own kid and they're having, like, an issue with their private parts. There's no reason an adult human should ask another adult human about their private parts. This is, like, basic shit. You know, much less in a television interview where you have two fucking professional women to ask about shit. And so apparently, and like I said, I haven't seen this video part. I've just read about it. But apparently Carrera literally shushed Couric and said that she didn't want to talk about that and said in the media, they always focus on either the transition or the genitalia. And I think there's more to trans people than just that. And then the interview continued and Laverne Cox said when a surgery and transitioning and genitals are all anybody talks about, then you don't talk about other really important narratives coming out of the trans community, like violence against trans people, homicides against trans women, the high rates of homicides against trans women, all these other important issues.
Yeah, constant discrimination.
Yeah, unemployment, all this stuff. You know, I don't know how you could be sitting in an interview and somebody asks you about your private parts and you don't just say fuck you and walk off the stage.
Yeah.
They were amazing. And as much as it's extremely frustrating that that's how Couric approached it, I think that the collective good that is, you know, two trans women being able to go on a probably broadly viewed morning show and actually speak for themselves and talk about, despite the questions from the interviewer, actually talk about, you know, issues that face the trans community and just talk about themselves and their careers. And, you know, I think that that is really, really great, even though kind of like it's really great in spite of the clear limits of an interviewer like Katie Couric. like.
Yeah, you have to criticize Couric for asking those questions. But it's better that Couric had two trans women on, even though she probably knew that she didn't have the vocabulary. Maybe she didn't know that she didn't have the vocabulary. But not having the vocabulary to talk about trans issues in a way that's respectful is shitty, but it's probably more shitty to negate the existence of trans people, you know, sort of in the way that when sometimes people don't want to say something like that will be seen as racially insensitive, uh-huh. so they engage in like colorblind language like that. So I think probably the stumbling blocks of cis people being like not knowing how to be respectful are probably ultimately like good stumbling blocks that have to happen.
They're learning experiences.
Yeah, and as long as one cis person doesn't just remain like stuck in their narrow, ignorant worldview, maybe if in the next interview that Couric does with trans women, Couric doesn't focus on genitals, then I think she would deserve credit for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, what's so great about how Carrera and Cox handled it is that they turned it into a learning opportunity and what us teachers call a teachable moment.
Yeah.
They were able to turn it into an opportunity to talk about other issues facing the trans community and say, this is why you shouldn't ask about genitals, because there's all these other issues to ask about. And so I think that that's a very, very positive thing.
All of us want to be educated, and Carmen was sort of recoil a little bit when I asked her about her transition, and she said that people who are not educated about this or familiar with sort of transgenders, they're preoccupied with the genitalia question. And I'm wondering if you think that's true and how if you have the same feelings about that Carmen does.
I do. I was very proud of you for saying that. And I do feel like there's a preoccupation with that. And I think that the preoccupation with transition and with surgery objectifies trans people. And then we don't get to really deal with the real lived experiences. The reality of trans people's lives is that so often we're targeted of violence. We experience discrimination disproportionately to the rest of the community. Our unemployment rate is twice the national average. If you're a trans person of color, it's four times the national average. The homicide rate in the LGBT community is highest amongst trans women. And when we focus on transition, we don't actually get to talk about those things. There's a young woman named Ilan Nettles who on August 17th was just walking down the street with some friends, you know, minding her own business, and she was catcalled by a couple of guys. And one of them, once they realized she was trans, she was beaten into a coma, and 5 days later, she died. This is the reality of so many trans people's lives in this country, trans women of color, whose lives are in danger simply for being who they are. And we're looking for justice for Ilan's murder, and we're looking for justice for so many trans people across this country. And by focusing on bodies, we don't focus on the lived realities of that oppression and that discrimination.
It's interesting. No one has the same definition for gender. So gender is a generic term that's used to refer to any and all aspects of gender orientation, gender identity, and gender expression. Gender orientation refers to one's subjective experience of one's physical sex. That is, your own private experience of your body, your sexed body. Gender identity refers to one's subjective experience of a cultural sex. So I identify as a man, I identify as a woman, neither or both. So gender expression refers to one's subjective experience of communicating gender orientation and gender identity. So how we do that, how we dress, how we talk, how we walk, all the kind of social cues. So that's my expression of gender. Taken together, these three dimensions of gender are the subjective results of the brain's neurology within the context of our society's culture. Any questions about gender? Yep, okay. So transgender, also known as trans or trans with an asterisk, you might see, TG. It's an umbrella term that encompasses a variety of people, including transsexuals, crossdressers, drag kings and queens, as well as bi-gender androgynous individuals. Transgender came into common usage during the 1970s, but was first used in 1965 to refer to transsexuals who wanted genital reconstructive surgery. Today, the term transgender is used to refer to individuals who are not cisgender. And cisgender, aka cis or cissexual, is an umbrella term that encompasses a variety of people who are not transgender. For example, this term is used to refer to someone who was sex male at birth, subjectively experiences their sex to be male, identifies as male, and experiences his identity in a manner consistent with cultural male gender stereotypes. Any questions? Yeah, okay. So now that we have talked about some terms, the next section is about connecting the dots, and that gets into talking about what your trans clients might be dealing with. And it talks about cis privilege. That is, I'll just define that. It refers to a set of unearned advantages that individuals who identify as their gender, as the gender they were assigned at birth, accrue solely due to having a cisgender identity. This section has a list of various examples of cis privilege that transgender people have asserted. So, like, number one, you can use the public restroom without fear of verbal abuse, physical intimidation, or assault.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
The one says who was sex male at birth.
Yes.
Born male.
Meaning that regardless if you are, so in Texas, if you were born intersex, right? That means that, so one out of every 500 live births in America is born intersex. That means that their body, their chromosomes, somehow are representative of both male and female. They are assigned a gender. Okay? A doctor will make the call, okay, you're going to be male, you're going to be female. You are assigned a sex, regardless of what your gender orientation is. So we are all assigned a sex.
And generally that happens without genetic testing. So they look and say, the doctor thinks that your external genitalia looks female, so you're assigned mm-hmm. the sex of female without any kind of genetic testing.
Right, exactly. So, and whenever we say assign male, so we assign a child a set of stereotypes that we, you know, we, and I say we as in culture, our culture hopes that and expects that they should adhere to. You know, we're going to give a little boy little, you know, boy toys, we're going to give them blue clothing and those kinds of things because that somehow connotes male. We're going to assign that to them. We're going to acculturate them in those expectations. So when we talk about assigning male and assigning female at birth, that's what we're talking about. And that's a very good question.
So my next question would be, if they're an adult and mm-hmm. have both, they're called what?
So hermaphrodite is an older term that's fallen out of use. Back in around 1940, the term that was, here in America at least, that came into common usage within the medical community was intersex. And within the community of intersex individuals, intersex is the term, is the preferred term.
So on cis privilege, you're talking about those privileges that are inherent, meaning cis privileges of being a female, cis privilege of being a male. And then what happens is the cisgenderism happens because it's going against that privilege of being male or being considered female, and then there comes that dichotomy of this crazy.
Exactly. And let me give you some real-world examples that I've personally seen. And this is kind of historically. So if you are a trans person and you're working at a job, it has been historically perfectly legal for your employer to come up to you and say, look, I just found out you're one of those freaks. We don't like your kind here. You're fired. Perfectly fine, perfectly legal. Let's say that employer was a real ass and decided to call your landlord and let them know that they have someone like that living there. It would be perfectly fine, perfectly legal for that landlord to go knock on your door and say, look, we didn't know you were one of those kind of people. We don't like that here in this kind of neighborhood. Get out. Now that you're homeless, you know, it's been perfectly legal, perfectly fine for lots, in fact, all historically homeless shelters to go, we don't like your kind here either. Yeah, we might have some extra beds, but you can't sleep here. And so what does that lead to? And so in the very back, it talks about the results of that, the stats. 46% are unemployed. 28% attempt suicide. 30% are homeless. 21% HIV positive. Now, I want to just pause on that. 21% HIV positive. Can anyone give me the rate of HIV infection within sub-Saharan Africa?
80%.
Yep. 5%. And that's significant. That really is very significant. So I just want to juxtapose that rate. It's the highest HIV infection rate, period. Victim of rape, 42%. 42% of the population, victim of rape. 48%, victim of assault. And of course, 56% no health insurance. So that's kind of the real world effect of cis privilege, of these kinds of institutionalized barriers that push a community kind of to the edge of our society in real world terms. You can't get a job, or you are thrown out of your house because maybe your parents don't particularly like people like you. And maybe the child shelter, the youth shelter in your town, decides that they don't like trans people either. And let's say that maybe you go looking for social services and, you know, you walk in and the receptionist laughs at you. Give you, for instance, I have a friend who was HIV positive, well, still is HIV positive, and she started her transition, went to a very well-known provider, walked in the door, the receptionist laughed at her, and so she turned around and walked away and fell out of care for that reason. There's this graph here comparing rates of PTSD, social anxiety, among the trans population. And this really shouldn't be news. I mean, you've got a population that has high rates of assault and rape and discrimination. So it compares rates of PTSD and, between the transgender population, the cisgender population, and military personnel. And as you can see, the trans population's rate of PTSD is off the charts. And to give you a sense of that, I've had clients show up numerous times to their appointments black and blue because they dared get on the bus. I've known numerous trans people who were murdered. And I've known numerous individuals who round up taking their own life. The reality for trans people is it's likely that they've known someone who, if they've not been murdered, they've had an attempt made on their life. They're going to know people who killed themselves. They're going to, if they haven't been raped, they know someone who's been raped. If they've not been beaten, they certainly know people who have been beaten. And so if they're fortunate enough to have their own place to live, you know, generally, before they get ready to go outside, they're going to spend about 2 hours getting ready. And not because they think they're RuPaul and a diva. It's because they want to ensure that when they walk out that door, they're not going to get beaten or killed. And you live with that day after day after day after day, 24/7, year in, year out.
Conservation is the first and best resource option for BC. Do your part. Turn off the lights when you leave a room and unplug your cell phone charger when charging is complete. Visit bchydro.com to find out more ways you can make a difference. This message brought to you by BC Hydro Power Smart and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
You know, I listened to the last episode, and my feeling is that 2013 into this year, it's been this era that has opened the awareness to transgender issues in the mass media, and for better or worse. And certainly it's been clumsy, as demonstrated in your first trans-themed episode, which, by the way, I learned so much from, and yet you had the best of intentions, and yet I also learned so much about how much I don't know when you discussed the repercussions from it. And I'm glad you didn't get glitter bombed like Dan Savage has in the past. And I'm glad you took the heat for the stuff I didn't know. But one issue that has come up in my personal life that I'm not clear about is sports. So a couple of years back, there was a controversy in the sport of fencing. There was an athlete who had competed at a medium level in men's competitions who transitioned in adulthood and then went on to become the women's world champion in her age group. So either there was a leap in her athletic skill that coincided with her transition, or she had a physical advantage over her cis female competitors, or some combination of both. So the dilemma in the community was, is this fair? And in my mind, I'm pretty sure it is. But I know of at least one fencer who retired in protest, who was at the top of her game, and I'm completely sympathetic to her frustration. And, you know, this is not as serious an issue as incarceration or hate crimes, which you covered really well in the most latest episode. But I hope some other listeners or you can help clarify the issue, so because, you know, I know people involved in this, and I want to be able to engage them with some knowledge and insight. So thanks in advance, and thanks for doing the show.
And so what I want to do today is kind of do a postscript, not to this episode, but to the previous episode on trans rights. And specifically, I played a segment that discussed the interview between Piers Morgan and Janet Mock, who's a trans woman who wrote a book and was sort of on a media tour. And that the first interview he did with her went really badly. It was very ham-handed, but from everything I've seen, everything I've heard from him, I think it was very well-meaning. I think he tried to do a good job. I think he tried to, you know, be very cordial and you know, promote her very heavily and sort of take her side. It was not meant to be an adversarial interview at all. And so he very sort of confidently stepped into this interview, not realizing he was walking in the wrong direction. The interview focused very much on her, you know, physical transformation, her personal interactions with boyfriends, and talking about, you know, how do you break the news about physical transformation and so on. And all of this was sort of the reason why the episode of mine that I posted was titled, "If you're talking about genitals, then you've already missed the point," because that's exactly what he did. He was completely missing what should have been the point, and had no idea. And so the reaction he got to that interview was very negative from the trans community, and rightfully so. But he was like dumbfounded by it, just could not understand it. And so today, I'm going to try to sort of explain what was going on from his point of view, you know, because straight, white, cis guys don't get their point of views explained enough. But I'm going to try to do both sides, but I can do a better job of explaining Pierce's side, because he's part of the community that I identify with. But I will try to do both sides. So I gave myself a couple days to think about this, And I think I can explain it, but please do not be confused, and do not confuse explaining with excusing or justifying. I'm not excusing or justifying. I'm simply explaining. It's really about empathy. This is a theme that comes up over and over again. I'm a big fan of empathy. I think everyone should have it. I think everyone should, use it as often as possible. Helps you understand where other people are coming from. Helps you understand the world better, and so on. And so I did, as I like to do, I came up with an analogy because he doesn't realize that everything is fake. And the moment that he learns that the entire world is fake and that nothing is as it seems is, I think, based on my own experience, because I've gone through this myself on this show, I think that learning that the entire world is different than you imagined it was, as Truman does in the movie, is more or less what it's like to be confronted with your enormous amounts of privilege and to be told the way you see the world as an incredibly privileged person is not the way the rest of us see it, or, many of us see it. And so with Piers in this interview situation, he followed up the first interview with a second to basically confront Janet Mock with the backlash that he had received, and insisted that he had been very well-meaning, that he had tried his best to not be offensive and to be supportive of her, and he could not for the life of him understand why he was being vilified when he was trying to do good. And I think that it can be that moment that he experienced was that sort of freak out moment when you realize, or at least when you're told, everything you think is real is different than you think it is. So I said this story is about empathy. Obviously, when you're dealing between two communities, one, the enormously dominant community that Piers Morgan belongs to, rich, white, straight, cis men in America, even though he's from England, discussing transgender issues with a trans black woman, empathy necessarily is going to flow and needs to flow like 99% in one direction and 1% in the other, because there's just not much about Piers Morgan that you need to empathize with. Not much about his life is terribly difficult given this comparison. But there is that 1%. So, as I said, to explain, not to excuse or justify, I really sort of identified with that freak-out moment he had being confronted and being told what you thought was real and, the way you conducted that interview and the way you thought it was good was not, is something that will, really mess with a person. So if you can imagine what it would be like to wake up and realize that everything about your world is fake, like Truman did in The Truman Show, that'll give you a sense of what it's like to be, confronted the way Piers Morgan was. Now, how he deals with that and how any of us deal with being confronted, with information like that is where you really start to get, where you get to start judging people and determine, are you taking this well, or are you digging your heels in and insisting, no, I was definitely right, and, all of this whole fake world around me, that really is the real world. And unfortunately, that's the path Piers Morgan took. So then he loses all sympathy, unfortunately, for him. That's from his perspective. And as demonstrated in that interview, I played it in context during the call, you know, Carmen Carrera actually was, you know, if she wasn't happy, she was at least willing to, you know, answer those sort of general questions and about the process, and even started offering some of the surgeries that she had had done, but then became incredibly uncomfortable when the, you know, you would think obvious, obviously over-the-line question was asked about, you know, basically, well, do you still have a penis? And, you know, that's why that interview was, you know, taken up by so many people as evidence of, like, the cluelessness of so many people who conduct these interviews. But the second point on this I want to hope to illustrate is something that has solidified for me just really recently as listening to, you know, these clips that were in that episode, as well as a bunch of other stuff that I haven't had a chance to play yet. This is mostly coming from Janet Mock during her Piers Morgan interview, is that there needs to be a fundamental change in the conversation, and that there needs to not be such a focus on the surgery, because the surgery is not the defining moment that uninformed cis people have always thought it is. You know, it's not the moment that you then become the real gender you've always felt you were. So Janet Mock, talking with Piers Morgan, you know, he was asking her, you know, that he was focusing a lot right after the surgery. You know, did you feel different right after the surgery? When you looked in the mirror right after the surgery, did you finally feel like you were the person you were always meant to be? And Janet's point was, no, that happened a long time ago. I've, you know, been a full woman, felt completely like a woman, and, you know, everything, you know, was, you know, everything was as it was meant to be long before the actual surgery happened. So, I mean, to put it another way, the writing was on the wall long ago, and the surgery was just crossing the T's and dotting the I's, you know? And so that needs to be a fundamental shift in the conversation that, you know, surgery or not, that is not really the point, because talking in a pre-op, post-op, you know, paradigm is sort of continuing the gender binary concept, which is the sort of thing that needs to be broken down to fully understand what gender is all about anyways. If, you know, some people, as the image for that episode was, you know, it said, not all people fit into the gender binary, get over it. So, you know, there is such a thing as a gender binary, and a lot of people don't fit into it. So the pre-op, post-op conversation just misses the point by such a wide margin that that's why it's doubly offensive. It's not just, you know, it's not just incredibly personal. It's also really missing the point. And it's not just missing the point because it's more important to talk about how trans people are threatened with violence. It's also missing the point because that's just not how gender works. That's not the defining moment that we need to be focusing on when discussing trans gender issues.
I knew I had a problem.
I tried counting calories, eating and eating.
Nobody else could possibly understand.
We understand. We're Overeaters Anonymous, and we have helped thousands of people stop their compulsive eating and start living a healthy, rewarding life.
With OA, I am living again and loving it.
Start living the life you deserve with help from Overeaters Anonymous. Find us on the web at OA.org.
This has clearly been a big week for the LGBT community, but it's also been a big year for the tea part of that equation, from Caitlyn Jenner's Vanity Fair cover to TV shows like Transparent to another small milestone just this Friday.
Actress Laverne Cox marked another milestone with the drop of a curtain at Madame Tussauds San Francisco.
Now that is a big step forward for transgender Americans, and it's frankly about time. Because bear in mind, it came after the same milestone for Spider Americans and Wookiees. But for all the strides transgender people have made lately, let's not get too complacent about how far we've come, because they still face a host of obstacles. Even when the news media are trying to be supportive, they can make dumb mistakes.
Your private parts are different now, aren't they?
I don't want to talk about it because it's really personal.
Don't you feel funny with the wrong genitalia? Wait, not as a joke, you stand up in the women's bathroom.
You've got breast implants.
I they're tasteful, whatever's going on there.
Thank you.
So if I saw you undressed, you would look like a woman to me, totally. Yes?
What are you doing? It is no more okay to ask transgender people about their sex organs than it would be to ask Jimmy Carter whether or not he's circumcised. Which, by the way, he is. Smooth like a boiled carrot. And don't think about that. And sometimes, the media's confusion is even more basic than that, as in the case of this Arizona weatherman just 2 weeks ago.
And a transgender woman says she was kicked out of a Tempe bar. Let's bring it back to that earlier headline. Now, what is a transgender woman?
Yes.
What does that even mean now?
Okay.
Do you break? I thought it means
she used to be a guy.
But now is a woman.
This is
so weird.
Are you just saying a woman? I can't even keep up anymore.
Holy shit. I really hope that's also how he reports the weather. Wait, it used to be rainy and now it's sunny? So now it's just sunny? Now I can't even keep up anymore. I can't. This doesn't make my head work. Look, let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe for him and for many people, this is new information. Maybe he's thinking about transgender issues for the first time and he needs a minute to try and understand it. So let's take that minute to fill in that bamboozled weatherman and everyone else on some basic details. Transgender people have a gender identity that differs from the one they were assigned at birth. And that gender identity is not the same as sexual orientation. Gender identity is who you are. Sexual orientation is who you love. Some transgender people do undergo hormone therapy or sex reassignment surgery as part of their transition. Some do not. And interestingly, their decision on this matter is, medically speaking, none of your fucking business. And if you're still wondering, well, hold on. What do I call a transgender person? It's so confusing. Well, actually, it's pretty simple. Call them whatever they want to be called. You can do it. We do it all the time. Think of it this way. David Evans woke up one day and said, everyone call me The Edge. And we all went, fine, The Edge. Are we talking the noun or the verb? It's not just that. Over the past 20 years, we've agreed to call this man Puff Daddy, P. Diddy, Just Diddy, and now Puff Daddy again. And most people don't even like him. And here's the thing. Here's the important thing. It's genuinely crucial that we get this right, because there are more transgender people in the US than you might realize. One study estimates that nearly 700,000 American adults are transgender. That's more than the population of Boston. And you probably know someone from Boston. I'll give you a clue. It was the guy who wore a Bruins jersey to your sister's wedding. While a handful of transgender people have been winning awards or appearing on magazine covers, the community at large has been facing some staggering challenges.
A 2011 survey by the National Center for Transgender Equality found 41% of transgender people had attempted suicide.
They are nearly four times more likely to make less than $10,000 a year compared to the general population.
78% of those surveyed reported harassment during K-12 schooling, 35% reported physical assault, and 12% were sexually assaulted.
That is terrible. Those statistics are so depressing, it's enough to make you angry at the very concept of numbers. F*** you, symbols meant to represent a specific value. You're the absolute worst. The worst. Look, we've clearly got work to do. Because when you're transgender, pretty much any interaction with bureaucracy can be humiliatingly difficult. Just take what happened to two transgender women when they went to the DMV in West Virginia.
Both women were asked to remove all their jewelry, makeup, and wigs before the DMV would photograph them.
They're saying that I need to fulfill a certain look that they are designating means male, and that I'm, you know, hiding who I am, which I'm absolutely not.
Both women say they were also referred to as it.
Words can't explain the humiliation I felt that day. That was the worst thing in 52 years of my life I have ever felt.
Listen, I'm not saying anyone has a good DMV experience, but that is the worst I have ever heard. And for the record, You get to pick virtually everything else on your driver's license. They ask you your weight. They don't weigh you like a prize hog. Plus, the whole idea of a driver's license photo is to present how you look from day to day. That's why DMV employees tell you not to smile, because they can't imagine anyone whose normal existence involves happiness in any form. And even in organisations that have seemed willing to change, that change has come frustratingly slowly. Take the military. Both the Secretary of Defence and President Obama have indicated they are open to transgender troops being able to serve. And yet, they're still banned from enlisting because of weirdly archaic restrictions on things like defects of the genitalia, such as change of sex, and psychosexual conditions, including but not limited to transsexualism and transvestism. Our current recruitment poster is essentially, I want you, maybe, after we talk about your genitals for a bit. I know that's weird, but for the moment, this is apparently how we do things. And yet, even despite those restrictions on enlistment, by one estimate, there are currently 15,000 transgender service members. And while you can be discharged for being transgender, those rules are enforced inconsistently depending on your branch of service and commanding officer, meaning experiences can vary wildly. For some, like Logan Ireland, it can be great.
What I like about this deployment is I can be my authentic self. I'm just another guy. Whereas back home, I'm still seen as female and I go by female regs and standards. Here in Afghanistan, a war zone, it's like a vacation to me because I can be myself in such an austere environment.
It is not a great sign for how we treat transgender people that Afghanistan is a place where you can be yourself. That is the least likely tourism slogan for Afghanistan. Put it right behind water park capital of the world and birthplace of the twerk. But compare that with the experience of Captain Jacob Eleazar of the Army National Guard, who faced discharge for being transgender despite his own commander's support and the fact he was being awarded a medal.
The thing that stuck with me the most is as they were pinning that Army Commendation Medal on me, my regimental commander said, thank you for everything that you've done for our regiment, Jacob. And use my real name, and I can't express just the emotion of that juxtaposition. It's like you're kicking me out, but you're acknowledging me for myself and giving me an award at the same time.
That's utterly ridiculous. They gave him an award and then tried to kick him out. It's pretty much what Hollywood did to Cuba Gooding Jr. And that wasn't okay either. But this is the big problem. This is the big problem because even when people say the right things about the transgender community, too often practical change fails to follow. And perhaps the perfect embodiment of this concerns bathrooms. We all use them. As the good book tells us, everyone poops. Or, as it's known in England, everyone poops but the Queen. She has people do it for her. Across the country, there have been efforts by lawmakers to fight non-discrimination ordinances with so-called bathroom bills, like this one in Arizona.
It's a new Show Me Your Papers bill for Arizona. The sex on your birth certificate would have to match the sex of the bathroom or locker room that you use. The target, transgender men and women here in Arizona.
6 months in jail, $2,500 fine for just going into pee.
$2,500 fine for peeing in the wrong place. Look, unless you happen to urinate a 1989 Chateau Petrus, you're not even going to break even on that deal. In the most recent session, at least 13 bathroom bills have been introduced in state legislatures, and the reasoning behind them can be pretty insulting. Just listen to presidential candidate Mike Huckabee.
We are now in city after city watching ordinances that say that your 7-year-old daughter, if she goes into the restroom, cannot be offended and you can't be offended if she's greeted there by a 42-year-old man who feels more like a woman than he does a man. Now, I wish someone had told me when I was in high school that I could have felt like a woman when it came time to take showers in PE. I'm pretty sure I would have found my feminine side and said, Coach, I think I'd rather shower with the girls today. You're laughing because it sounds so ridiculous, doesn't it? there's something inherently wrong with forcing little children to be a part of this social experiment.
No, but there is something inherently wrong with forcing us to listen to your fucked up daydreams about all the sex crimes you would have committed as a teenager had you just been able to find a legal loophole. That's weird. And that kind of baseless fear-mongering is everywhere. It even turned up in a campaign ad when Gainesville, Florida was trying to pass one of these bills. Okay, let's break that bullshit down. Because, first, assaulting children is still illegal. Secondly, someone abusing a non-discrimination ordinance to assault someone in a bathroom is almost unheard of. It's a borderline imaginary crime, like dragon rustling or space bestiality. Sure, it's terrible, but it doesn't really happen. Also, forcing transgender people into certain bathrooms can actually be much more disruptive, as activist Michael Hughes, a transgender man, showed with this photo of himself looking understandably awkward in a ladies' room. Because there are many places that Michael would fit in. A tattoo parlor in Reno, playing steel guitar in a Johnny Cash tribute band, or on the label of his own barbecue sauce. But a women's bathroom? Yeah, not so much. Besides, it is so much easier for everyone when people are allowed to use the bathroom that matches their gender identity rather than one that might match the genitalia they were born with. That is why the little pictures on bathroom doors are stereotypical representations of men and women and not biologically accurate depictions of penises and vaginas, because that would be troubling for children. Mummy. Do I go with the one with the pouty slug or the angry goat skull? I'm scared. And yet, legislators have even tried to enforce these bills in high schools with damaging consequences. Take the case of Henry Brousseau, a transgender high school student who spoke in opposition to a proposed bathroom bill in Kentucky.
Even though I've been living as a male for some time, I've been accepted by my friends and family as a male, I was being forced to use the girls' bathroom at my school until very recently. Because the school administration did not support my gender identity by letting me use the restrooms concordant with my gender identity, the kids at my school bullied me. The kids thought that because the administration didn't support my gender identity, they didn't have to either.
And that is the whole point. Official rules can end up legitimizing prejudice. And besides, teenagers really don't need extra ideas for how to make each other's lives miserable. That's what they do. Sit on your own, Becca. Side ponytails are so five nevers ago. And look, as Henry finished his speech, it actually seemed like he'd really connected with the legislators.
If you don't know a transgender kid already, you do now. You know me, Henry. Please let me know how I can be of any further assistance, and thank you so much for your time today, and please vote no on Senate Bill 76.
I educated myself a lot today, and I appreciate the testimony.
You should be proud of yourself for being able to stand in front of this committee and be so articulate in your comments.
Henry, I love you, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate your courage. I can't really imagine that anyone else in this room has the kind of courage that it took for you to come and testify today.
Okay. I love you, man. It's a little much. I love Henry too, but he's not the best man at your wedding. He's a teenage boy trying to take a shit in the men's room. And it's worth noting, once they were done patting Henry on the back and then patting themselves for patting Henry, all three of those lawmakers voted to advance the bill to force him into bathrooms where he's bullied. Now, thankfully, that particular bill never became law, but that dynamic of praising a transgender person's courage and then not actually supporting them speaks to the fact that we are weirdly comfortable celebrating transgender people while simultaneously dehumanizing them at the DMV, pinning awards to them as we drum them out of the military, and constantly quizzing them about their genitals. And look, this is a civil rights issue. And if you are not willing to support transgender people for their sake, at least do it for your own. Because We've been through this before. We know how this thing ends. If you take the anti-civil rights side and deny people access to something they're entitled to, history is not going to be kind to you. There is no biopic where Liam Neeson kicks the shit out of a suffragist. There's not a stamp featuring George Wallace at the schoolhouse door. And you are not going to get a monument that says at the base of it, he told people where to shit.
And that's all we have this week. Next week will be another show kind of like this, but on a mystery topic. But after that will be the reboot and retooling of Radio Free Thinker. Thank you all for listening. This is Don saying, eyes open, minds on.
If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe.
Thanks for listening to Radio Free Thinker. Remember to visit us online at radiofreethinker.com. And subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. If you have any local skeptical events you would like us to mention on the air, email us at info@radiofreethinker.com.
Venture to the stars. A still more glorious dawn awaits, not a sunrise, but a galaxy rose. A morning filled with 400 billion suns. The rising of the Milky Way. The cosmos is full beyond measure.
With Professor Hawking, did the universe start with a big bang?
We observe that distant galaxies are moving away from us. They must have been closer together in the past. It was the beginning of